welcome back to Yellow Bee Pod. I'm Natalie, the host here. How are you all doing this week? And big thank you to you for tuning back in to listen. Yellow Bee Pod is a podcast to highlight East and Southeast Asians, particularly here in the UK where I'm based. I'm British born Chinese and I just feel like we don't hear that much about East and Southeast Asian communities. But we do exist, we're all here. And thanks to everyone who I've recently connected with from my social media call out. So I did a big call out for East and Southeast Asians. And I'm just so excited to connect with more people and find people online and get to know them and their work. We might think that our ethnic minority group or groups are invisible, but we are here, we're doing different stuff, we're excelling in our fields, and I don't know, we're in every part of life, but maybe sometimes we feel a bit isolated, I don't know. We might not know about each other unless we come together. In episode 11, I was talking about people from East or Southeast Asian descent who are involved in British politics, and I have two more to add to that list. If you haven't heard the rest of them, go and download episode 11 now, where I'm answering listener questions, and this was one of them. So two more British Asian politicians to add to my list. Firstly, Bora Kwan. She is a councillor in London in Ravenscourt Park. I don't think I've ever been there actually. Bora Kwan, she's of Korean descent. Super cool. She's got a piece on The Guardian, like an interview. So if you want to find out more about her, I recommend checking that out. And also Sarah Owen, who is a Labour Party politician. She's an MP in Luton North. She's British Chinese. And apparently she's the first Labour MP of East Asian descent and the first female MP of Chinese descent. Damn. She also listens to the podcast. So hi, Sarah, and thank you for listening. In the last episode, I was also talking about things which are on my life bucket list. And thank you so much to the listeners who have messaged to tell me about rubber tapping, which is on my bucket list. And that's what it's called, rubber tapping. I think I was calling it like rubber harvesting or something. I don't know. But yeah, it's on my bucket list. And I hope that if I keep talking about it, I'll keep learning more and more about it. And eventually I'll actually have the opportunity to try it. Even if it turns out to be a bit rubbish and like it's probably going to be really uncomfortable, a listener pointed out that there will probably be like mosquitoes everywhere and it won't be fun like how I imagine, but I still want to do it, and it's kind of like me getting in touch with my Malaysian roots. I've learned through doing this podcast that the rubber industry was really big in Malaysia. Who knew? We're learning, guys. Thank you for coming along this ethnic identity journey with me. I want to get in touch with my roots, and for me, that involves rubber tapping. And if anyone wants to help me fulfill my other bucket list goals, you know, invite me to your child's birth. I want to be there, and I'll sell you something that I made that's on my bucket list. I'll sell you a cute line drawing of your house for £5. Or your childhood home or your wedding venue. That's what I'm drawing for a friend. I'm drawing her wedding venue. By no means an artist, but she requested it. And from last episode, we've also been talking on Yellow Bee Pod social media about the word banana. So are you a banana? I think I'm a banana. So we've been having good conversations about it, especially on Instagram, at Yellow Bee Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you have missed out on this conversation, jump in and join in now. It seems like some people use the word banana to talk about themselves, to self-describe, or sometimes like it's East Asians saying it about other East Asians. And I've definitely said it about myself, but now I'm thinking, I don't know if we should. Is it a slur? Like, is it a racial slur? Like, is it really derogatory? I actually don't know. Or is it okay if I say it as a banana myself? See, I just called myself a banana. I don't know. If it's a slur, obviously I don't want to be saying it. And I know I should be erring on the side of caution and not saying things if I think it's offensive, because, you know, it probably is then. But I like calling myself a banana. Speaking of slurs, have you ever used the word chink? I've used it on the podcast before. And I'm not sure, like some people say like the C word, some people like asterisk it out, but I just feel like the C word is something else. If you say C word, they think of a very, very different word. So I'm just going to say it, chink. Obviously, I know that chink is a slur and I'm not down with it, but I have used it before. I know it's a slur, but that doesn't mean that I've never used it. Actually, I've probably only used it in one very, very, very specific way. So the times that I would use the word chink or chinky is if I'm talking about like makeup styles or what kind of eyelashes or eyeliner I'm going for. Like when you're winging your eyeliner, you might do like a severe cat eye, and that might make you look more quote chinky, aka slanted. Oh god, now I'm explaining it. It sounds really offensive. But you know what I mean. I've always known that Chinese people are known for having slanted eyes, more so than other ethnicities. And if you do your makeup a certain style, particularly like that cat eye look, whether it's your eyelashes or your eyeshadow or your eyeliner, your eyes might look more slanted, like more elongated. And that's what I might call a chinky look. So that's probably the only time that I've used the word chinky. But obviously, if I went to a beautician, like someone to do eyelash extensions, if I went to a beautician and I can't just say I want a chinky look because they won't know what I'm talking about. But that is how I've used it sort of within private, like with Chinese friends and family, my sisters. But yeah, I don't think I've ever heard the word chink or chinky, really, have I? Apparently it's used a lot to talk about Chinese takeaways, but don't start using it because it's a slur. This is something that I'm learning because I genuinely don't think I've ever heard it to be used to describe a Chinese takeaway. Or maybe I have heard it. Sometimes I just forget these memories. Either I've forgotten them or I've like subconsciously blocked them out because they were traumatic. I don't know. In episode one, let's start all the way back to the first episode where I was talking to one of my younger sisters about ethnic identity. I mentioned that as a child in school, there would be some racist bullying. So for me, one that I really remember is being called garbage or garlic breath. And they got that from Garbo, which is my middle name, which is Cantonese. It's a Chinese name and it's legally like my middle name, Garbo. So they would turn that into garbage or garlic breath. Not cool. They thought they were being creative. And Garbo isn't really how you pronounce it in Cantonese, but that's how I say it with like English language pronunciation. But yeah, I didn't know at the time that it was racist. Like now I look back and I know that it was. But in terms of blocking memories, so a childhood friend, probably my best friend, my best friend when I was in primary school, she said it was actually a teacher who said it, who said garbage. I don't know whether she pretended to mishear my name or something, and that's just so out of order, like for a teacher to say that as an adult to a child that they have care over. That just makes no sense, but actually it's really believable. Yeah, so apparently it was my year five teacher and my friends were calling me Garbo, and the teacher was like, garbage bin. So out of order. But yeah, thanks to my childhood friend for bringing back that traumatic experience that I've clearly blocked from my memory. I'm just kidding, I do appreciate it. Actually, she messaged me to tell me that just before I started this podcast, so a couple of months back, before I released episode one. But yeah, it's nice to look back and reflect. Maybe nice isn't the right word, but it's good to look back and reflect and actually recognize, you know, where these microaggressions were. Sometimes they're not microaggressions. They're just racist aggressions. And another thing that I clearly blocked from my memory, so this whole time I always thought I never really experienced much racism growing up, and I think I've said it on this podcast as well, and I put that down to I just didn't really face that much discrimination because I was pretty quiet, tried to keep myself invisible, or I was pretty sheltered, like I wasn't going out and about hanging out with that many different people growing up. But that's also part of like recognizing my privilege. I haven't experienced as much discrimination as even other people of the same ethnic profile. So British born Chinese people have experienced far, far more. And that's what I'm realizing. So maybe sometimes I have faced discrimination, but I've just blocked it from my head. So now I'm at home all day, every day, quarantine, lockdown, whatever. I've started going through some of the stuff that I've been hoarding for years. And one of these is a folder from primary school. This is quite cute actually. They gave us a folder with a few bits of, you know, drawings and arts and photos and just random bits of work that we had done over like the first few years of our school life, and I've kept it. It includes a self-portrait that I drew. So at the age of 6, I drew a portrait of myself. That's pretty cute, isn't it? And then the teachers, they keep it all and put it into this book. And one of the things that's in the book, as well as, you know, my first tracing, a little story that I wrote, colouring in, or maths questions. The maths questions are cute. I don't know why. So cute. Anyway, so one of the things that's also in the book is, so when I was 7, they got us to write down all of our memories from the first 3 years of our school life, so infant school years. And I joined the first year of primary school partway through the year because we moved house, moved area. So I joined sort of partway through the year, and I'm writing, you can see where I've written about it in this little book. And one of the memories that I wrote in this, like on pencil, on this bit of paper, which is still stuck inside this folder that I still have now. It says, this is what I wrote. After the register, the teacher name of the teacher, told Lucy to look after me for the rest of the day because I was starting partway through the school year, so they gave me a buddy. When it came to lunchtime, some year two children bullied me because I was Chinese. Let me say that again. Some year two children bullied me because I was Chinese. And if you had asked me, like, I just dug this out from like a box of stuff that I've hoarded, and I'm really glad I kept it because it is cute, it's like memories. But if you had asked me a couple of months back, like, were you bullied or were you teased as a kid or in the playground for being Chinese, I would have said no. I would have said, no, you know what? I don't think anyone's ever said a slur to me. No one's done anything like teasing me or bullying me in the playground. I haven't had that experience. But you know what? Clearly I did, because me at the age of 7, I wrote down this memory from my first 3 years of school life onto this paper, and I can't just make an excuse and say that, oh, it's only now that I'm older and I have a better understanding of the world that I look back and recognise that it was racial discrimination. I was a tiny kid then. Like, it happened to me, what, I would have been 4 years old, and then I wrote about it at 7 years old, and I knew then that it was because I was Chinese. Like, I knew then. So I can't say anymore that I haven't really faced racial discrimination, even though I recognise that other people have faced far, far more. I knew then that I was getting bullied because I was Chinese. And you know what? Kids are cruel. Kids are cruel, but adults are crueler. So all of these racist kids, they grow up to be people, adults, with actual power. You know, doctors, servers, managers, all sorts of jobs. Or they grow up to become low-key racist teachers, like the one I had, who was clearly deliberately kind of getting my name wrong. I don't know. Or not low-key racist, high-key racist. So yeah, unless we teach kids otherwise, they're just going to grow up with these sort of beliefs or thinking certain things are okay when they're really, really not. And of course, people do change. And this is something I've been thinking about over the last week because, man, some madness has been happening with my secondary school alumni group. So like a lot of people who grew up in the UK, my school was mostly white students. And with Black Lives Matter being a conversation that we've been having over the last, what, month and a half now, and it is a conversation that we need to keep happening, a lot of the things that we've been talking about here in the UK that you are aware of as well is how little we learn about the British Empire when we're at school, or not just at school, like in society in general, when we watch documentaries on the BBC, I don't know. The British Empire is still portrayed as a good thing, and we never really talk about the British Empire. We just say, I don't know, what do we even learn about it in school? So in history lessons, well, we don't learn about it that much. So we spend a lot of time learning about Romans and Tudors and maybe the World War. But we do talk about, you know, Victorians and a bit about the British Empire. But what we learn about it is that it was big. It was big, it was powerful, and it's like a good thing in British history. That's definitely the vibe that I got. And I guess I haven't studied history since I was 14. But that's still the vibe I got from those years of education and in the outside world. So when you're reading books or watching TV or reading articles. And the problem with that is we don't recognise all the atrocities that happen or how many people died or how it affects us to this day. Anyways, so because of this, some people from my year group, from my secondary school year group, started writing a letter to the school. I'm not exactly sure how it happened. It might have even been started by a member of the school staff whose job is to look after or to keep in contact with alumni, so students who have left. But basically, I got added into this massive group chat of people, I think mostly in my year or some other year groups, who have now long left the school. And they're writing a letter to the school to say they need to start including more stuff about British Black history, Britain's role in slavery, etc. They, like, start including that in the curriculum. They had this whole long letter and talking about sort of how serious it is, how George Floyd isn't only an American issue, but it affects us here in the UK. All of that is good stuff. But the problem was that a lot of people in this group chat were, like, some of them who probably signed the letter as well, because they were getting loads of students to sign the letter. But some of these people had, they were, like, very overtly racist. Like, not even just the white students. And I'm not going to go too much into it because it's not my story to tell. It wasn't about sort of me facing discrimination. It was just a lot to deal with because there was all these people in this group chat. They brought back all of these sort of feelings and experiences, not necessarily just for me, but also for other students who are people of colour. And I'm not really in touch with that many of them. Most of the people in the group chat I will probably never speak to again for the rest of my life. But it's always just been like pushed in the back of my head. It's something we've moved on from. And all with all the madness that's happening in 2020, this all got brought up again. And it's a very legitimate point because it was a bit virtue signalling, because the way that they were like, yes, we're going to write this letter, but without actually showing in the group chat that they were sorry about things that they might have said or been complicit in the past, or things that they might have done. And it's just a lot to deal with. Yeah, I don't want to get too much into it, but I just imagine it. So kids from your school, maybe you experienced racist bullying, and now they're trying to post on Instagram and write letters and saying how anti-racist they are, but then in the back of your head you still know all the awful things that they said to you. And yes, 100% people do change. I've changed a lot since I was at school, and I'm sure I've been complicit with things in the past that I'm not proud of. So people do learn, people do change, but that doesn't mean that it's not hard for those who have experienced sort of racist bullying and discrimination, and it doesn't mean that those who have experienced it need to forgive them. Whew. That was just a big thing on my mind the other week, and just wanted to share that with you because I don't think I'm going to be the only person with an experience like this, and it's just a lot to deal with. I left that ginormous Facebook group chat pretty soon because I could only see it going one way, and also I realised that a lot of the people who were in the group chat were not necessarily there because they had opted into a Black Lives Matter conversation, but because it was just because they also went to that school, so that everyone got added in. I didn't want to be out here sort of airing my grievances and airing everything that should be said. I don't know, even thinking about it now, it's making my heart feel tight. It's just like a lot to deal with. Again, it's not even about me. That is how I feel about it. It's just mad. 2020, I would never have thought that they would be having those conversations, because in my head that's sort of pushed back. It's been years since we left school, and it's just been left in the past, and I guess I need to put it back in the past now. Anyways, I'm super excited to be joined by a special guest this episode. I'm joined by stand-up comedian Ken Cheng. I really love his work, and he has a Radio 4 show called Chinese Comedian. You can listen to season 1 on that BBC Sounds app. I think maybe not if you're not in the UK, I'm not sure. But it's the only reason I actually have the BBC Sounds app. I don't know, is there anything great to listen to on there apart from Chinese Comedian? I don't know. But yeah, check it out. Link in show notes. And each episode is pretty short. It's fun. It's a like stand-up comedy clip set. And yeah, it's really funny, and I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast that you'll like it a lot as well. Plus, if enough of us go to listen to it, listen to season 1, hopefully BBC will put season 2 back on BBC Sound so we can listen to that too soon. Do you hear us, BBC? Put season 2 back on. It was really great to chat to Ken Cheng earlier this quarantine lockdown, and we just had like a real chat. He's British born Chinese. What did we talk about? We talk about Crash Landing on You, the huge Korean TV show which you can watch on Netflix. I actually haven't watched it yet, but you know, I think the FOMO is getting too much. I'm actually gonna have to watch it. Well, I don't really watch TV dramas and stuff that much, and I always miss out on things that other people are into. But not only was everyone talking about it, I don't know, a couple of months back, but people are still talking about Crash Landing on You now, so I'm going to have to watch it. I've given in. I'm going to commit. I, Natalie, commit to watching at least one episode of Crash Landing on You in the next week before the next episode of Yellow Bee Pod. So before the next time we speak, after today, I'm going to promise that I will watch Crash Landing on You. Not the whole thing, one episode. Let me know what I need to know as well if you've been watching it. Like, who are the sexy guys? I want to know. I'm very excited. I can't remember the last time I watched a Korean TV show. Something else that Ken Cheng and I speak about in this episode is getting mixed up with other Asians. This seems to happen. I mean, it's just so common. Like, we even laugh about it, and it happens to people of colour of all ethnicities. And it's just such a common occurrence for BAME people or people of colour. And it's just a microaggression, I guess. People never mean it. And if you call them out on it, it's so awkward, but it's just common because aside from, you know, the standard ignorant questions like, where are you from? Or other questions that people of colour may get, getting mixed up with the one other black employee in the workplace or getting mixed up with the one other Chinese student. That actually happened to me when I was at school. Man, I'm really bringing back all the school memories for you this episode. In my year, there was a few Chinese students, actually, thinking about it, including international students. But there was one other girl who I'm really close with. She's a really good friend of mine. And she's Chinese. The teacher sat us in alphabetical order by surname. And he wrote down all our names and had this whole seating chart for us. And he still got us two mixed up. Like, he created this seating plan, seated us in alphabetical order. Our surnames are not close together. And yeah, still got our names mixed up. And I just feel like it just shows that, no, we don't look the same, but we still get treated as interchangeable. So when they look at us, they just see Asian person. They only see our race, full, you know, multidimensional, multifaceted people. They just see Asian girl, Asian girl. And then that's how they get us mixed up in their brain. I don't know. Is there another reason for it? It's just pure laziness, really. Ignorance and laziness. Anyway, so it happens a lot. Please let me know if this has happened to you, getting mixed up with another person in the workplace, in school, wherever. I want to hear about it because it's really frustrating. And keep listening to hear where Ken Cheng got mixed up with another Asian guy. Okay, I'm going to jump into the interview part of the episode now. If you aren't already following Yellow V Pod on Twitter and Instagram, go ahead, follow us. Also, hit the subscribe button. So open the app that you're listening to now, hit the subscribe button, and you won't miss a future episode. If you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, 5-star review. I would love that. And you can also share it with a friend. If something that I've said in this podcast episode has resonated with you and you think another mate of yours or a family member might enjoy it, send this episode over to them. And now I'll leave you with Ken Cheng. Woo! I also get his name wrong somehow in the episode. You can listen to it. I fuck it up. Hi, Ken.
Hey, Cheng.
Hey, Cheng. Basically, your surname is how people pronounce my surname.
That happens.
So it's really annoying.
I know.
Do people ever mistake your name for someone else?
They say Cheng sometimes. They say Chen without the G. I often get that printed out on like badges and stuff. Ken Cheng
really?
Or Ken Cheng.
That's so annoying.
Yeah. Occasionally I get Cheng as well with a U.
That's quite unusual. I often find that people don't know how to say my surname, so they just say it how they want to say it.
Fair
enough. Often I just carry on and go, well, I didn't introduce you properly in the end. How are you today?
I'm good. Yeah, just another day of lockdown, you know. I might become a Twitch streamer. I might start streaming. I've been setting up stuff to stream, but I haven't made the plunge yet.
Yeah, well, you've got a good gaming setup there, and if you're gaming anyway, you might as well stream it, create some content.
Yeah, I'll move over. No more comedy, it's all streaming.
I know that you're a professional poker player. Is that something that you can do now?
Yes, but I've been losing money recently, so yes and no. It's been tough.
That is a tough
last month.
I've heard that the gambling industry is kind of peaking because a lot of people are stuck at home.
Yeah, people, especially as actually the fact that there are no sports to bet on makes people go over to even like more dangerous gambling sites like roulette and...
Well, it could be dangerous, but it could also be, well, I don't know, maybe I watch too many movies. One of my good friends, from school, she's dating someone who's also a professional poker player. And at the beginning, I was really worried. Yeah. I was like, make sure you have your own income. Don't just move in with him and like not have your own stuff going on. And don't rely on that because, you know, anything could happen. And it can be a slippery slope, so I've heard about gambling.
Yes.
I mean, she does have her own job, but she does live with him. And yeah, I was being like quite protective and saying that she should protect herself and not rely on him. But I've since realised that she's living somewhere that I wouldn't be able to afford, that is really nice. She's safe. She's in a loving relationship. And I should just keep my mouth shut, really.
I'm worrying about my own business.
Yeah, I mean, people don't understand poker. Poker's not like the other gambling games. Poker is more of a skill game, and a lot of the other gambling games like roulette, that you will just mathematically lose money over time.
And you're into the maths.
I love the maths.
You actually read maths at university for a little while.
For a year, yes. Before I left.
And how does it feel to fulfill a stereotype?
I think I've just lived that stereotype my entire life. So I've kind of always fulfilled it. I've never known anything different. I was always good at maths when I was a kid.
That's kind of the same for me. And I wish I didn't fulfill that stereotype. But it's not the only one that I fulfill. But there's nothing I can do about it now.
Yeah, you can pretend to be bad at maths.
Yeah, have you ever tried to act like you're breaking a stereotype?
No, I've never done that. I just own it. I just go with it.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to own the maths, just like how I own that I'm a Chinese woman who's a really awful driver.
I can't even drive, so.
No, me neither. So I failed my test 4 times.
Oh.
So.
Well, there we go.
Yeah, have you ever tried to learn as a driver?
I lived in Cambridge where I could walk everywhere, and then I moved to London where you don't want to own a car, so I just thought, you know what, I'm never going to learn. Let the robots come in first. I'm waiting for self-driving cars to be the norm.
Yeah. I kind of feel like I'm turning into the you know, the people in the movie WALL-E, where they just sit down all day
and
they just talk to people through screens. That's basically my life in lockdown.
That's everyone's life at the moment, right?
Sat in one chair. And yeah, my only social interaction is through Zoom calls.
Yeah, sounds good. Why not? It's better than nothing.
I think I'd rather have that than self-driving cars and then just zoom around on a spaceship in a little chair where I don't need to do anything. And then I forget how to walk. That's not what I'm aiming for.
Just consume from the evil corporation. That owns everything.
Did you grow up in the UK?
Yeah, I was born here. Born in Cambridge. Yeah. Lived there for the first 25 years of my life.
And how come you moved to London?
Just because of comedy, really. There's way more work in London.
Yeah. How did you get into comedy?
I went to a student gig in Cambridge. I wasn't even a student at the time. I was still doing the degree. I just went to a gig and I thought, you know what? This looks fun. I might try it, and just signed up.
And then you moved to London and do you want to state some of your career highlights?
Shall I just roll some off? I think definitely the Radio 4 series is one of the things I'm proud of. I've had 2 series of Chinese comedian on Radio 4 now, 4 episodes each series. So that's just great to have that. It's great to be respected by the BBC and people working in the BBC and them giving me a platform, especially to talk about stuff unique to being Chinese and Asian and stuff. Yeah, that's always nice. And I'm proud of those series. I worked hard to make them not only what kind of comedy I do, but also about a specific topic or specific topics. I think that was a big challenge going into that series. And I'm proud of what I did with that.
Yeah, well, you should be. They're really funny. And I'm always sharing them with my other BBC friends.
Thanks.
In particular.
Yeah, they're fun. They're fun to do. And it's radio is really nice. It's much nicer and much more chill than TV or other parts of the industry. I think that you get a lot of freedom. They trust you a lot, the producers and stuff, and they just kind of go with what you want to do.
So were they recorded in front of a live audience?
Yes, they were. First one was recorded in the BBC Radio Theatre, which is where they recorded a lot of the radio, big radio panel shows and stuff, and that's fun. And then the second one we did in a comedy club, and we just recorded it, and there was an audience. So yeah, it could kind of wouldn't work without the audience, I don't think. Definitely, as I am a stand-up.
Yeah.
And it's in the style of stand-up. Once you take away the audience, it would just sound weird.
So was it the same audience for all 4 episodes of each series?
In the first one, we did 2 on each night. We did 2 nights, so 2 nights, 2 episodes each, and we just did those back. The second series, we actually did 4 in 1 night, but then we did 2 nights of that, so we had different versions available. So we got 2 runs at it, which was fun.
I think just as a fan of comedy, the sort of that last laugh is always really satisfying, especially when it links back to something before. And you have that at the end of every single one of the episodes that I've listened to.
It's hard.
Yeah, and you did that with the same audience was getting that last moment again.
Yeah, it's the hardest part of the four episodes is having four endings, actually. Because in total time, it's only 60 minutes. And that's the same as if you do a solo show at the Edinburgh Fringe, it's 60 minutes long. So in terms of quantity of stuff, it's not any different. But then to have four good endings is so hard. It's so hard to think of those endings.
Yeah.
I struggled a lot.
It worked out well, so I guess the work that you put into it was worth it in the end.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, they're good, like, bite-sized episodes of comedy and definitely relatable as someone who is British Chinese as well. There's one part where you say that you can just eat like a huge amount of rice.
Yeah.
This is so relatable.
When I get to a restaurant, there's not enough rice. There's never enough rice at a restaurant. I'm just like, at home, we used to just have loads of rice.
I know, I definitely agree. And even when I get like a ready meal or I go to somewhere like Wasabi, like the curry to rice ratio is never right.
Mm.
I always need like a whole extra serving of rice.
Extra side of rice, yeah.
Yeah. I used to like bring in my own lunches of like rice and whatever to my workplace. And when I'm microwaving it, people would look at me and be like, wow. Like, you really know how to put food away. That's what they used to say.
Lovely.
Oh, rice is life, so it's all good.
Rice is life, yeah.
Now, what is it like working in comedy, which is quite a historically a white man's world? I could probably count the number of Asian comedians in the UK on one hand that I know of.
I think it's actually changed a lot. And even the last 2, 3, 4 years, the makeup of comedy is changing pretty quickly, especially gender, I think, is getting more and more even in terms of new people coming in, the newcomers. There's a lot of big up and coming female comedians who are making more of a name for themselves. There's more of them on TV shows and in lineups. And even with non-white, actually, it is, stand-up has been a good platform for people of colour, because I think it's a lot of it is just a person going up with a mic, and that actually has broken down some barriers in the past. And you think about some of people's favourite comedians in the past, historically, they are not white. Like a lot of big names that people talk about, Richard Pryor and like Chris Rock and those kind of in America, like a lot of black comedians, and the same here with a lot of up-and-coming Asian, South Asian comedians. And I think East Asian is definitely the smallest, but that's because we are the smallest in the UK. We are way smaller than British Indians, British Pakistani, Black British. There's like, there's just way less of us. So, but even then, in the last few years, there's been a lot of East Asian, Southeast Asian comedians who are breaking into the mold, like Evelyn Mok, who you talked to, Nigel Ng, Phil Wang, all the kind of Huge Davies. There's quite a lot who are coming up. Like, it's still under 10, but that's way more than zero, which it was for so long.
Yeah, definitely. I guess we need to celebrate what we have and take what we can get. And yeah, hopefully that number will grow across all different forms of media, creativity and arts.
I think there is an excitement for it generally, globally. Stuff like the boom of like Crazy Rich Asians and stuff in American film. You see more and more of that now and on TV. You see there's a clamour for it. There's an excitement about it, I think, for the first time. That's only happened in the last few years.
What do you think has driven that change?
I don't know, really. I think it is just slowly over time, people have been able to get into those positions and make that kind of thing. I guess culture is becoming more curious about it. I guess East Asians are being more normalized in media thanks to stuff like importing South Korean stuff, importing both K-pop and K-drama. People are slightly getting more used to East Asian people on their screens. But also in terms of China, it's economically, it's becoming more important globally. And I think that is being reflected in culture as well.
Yeah, I think there is an argument for importing media from China, Korea, Japan, etc. Yeah. And also from Asian American communities. But there's also, I would love to see more homegrown, like actually like British Asian, but East Asian representation.
It's an uphill battle because there's so few of us. There's getting more and more. There's a lot of, there are pockets working in theatre, pockets working in comedy. There's an uphill battle, but I think it become more normal once young Chinese boy or girl will see a Chinese person on TV, maybe doing comedy, maybe acting, and go, actually, I can do that, because I never grew up thinking that when I was between the ages of 0 and like 20. 21 is when I started doing stand-up. I never at any point thought I could be in that job, I could be in that role in society. It was just not, it was never imprinted onto me that I could chase that dream. Well, I think a lot of people who grew up in different white backgrounds can just go, oh, I live in a world, I grew up in a world where my parents were working in a theatre, I was going to theatre, I can just be in that world, I went to a school where I did drama, etc. Like, richer middle class, more upper middle class white people have always had that, so they've always had that instilled in them, while we just probably never had that for ages, and hopefully we will.
Yeah, I do think it does make a big difference, and like seeing someone sort of in your image, like doing something and having that as a role model. And actually in my day job, I promote things and I'm always talking about role models and representation for all young people, except my job is all about getting kids interested in maths and science,
right?
Which is maybe not 100% what the British Chinese community needs.
Maybe not. It's also good to own that, I guess, where it is something that a lot of Chinese kids excel at. And I was never as proud of that when I was growing up as I should be. I think a lot of kids should be proud of what they're good at, and we were just always taught to keep our heads down and just do it.
Yeah, well, it's so common for people to say, oh, I can't do maths, as if like it's not even worth them trying. And you hear people saying that, including teachers who aren't math teachers, and people's parents. So it's no wonder that kids get influenced and start saying it as well. But it's pretty rubbish, because math is a pretty core skill. Okay, maybe not the kind of math you were reading at Cambridge, but you know, basic arithmetic, I feel like, is pretty useful in everyday life.
Yeah, I think so. Good for the games. Good for the games.
Do you play a lot of like strategy related games, and also poker that uses that sort of skill?
Poker definitely uses that skill. A lot of card games use that skill, and a lot more card games going about these days. Yeah, a lot of strategy actually does use the same skill.
Doing like maths and stats in your head.
I think automatically, when playing games. I think game theory, or like understanding what is a good decision in a game, is automatically maths. On some level, it's always maths deciding between two decisions in a game.
Have you ever used a maths chat up line?
I don't think so.
Maybe not successfully.
Maybe ironically, but probably at some point in my life, I've tried. Is that something you do?
No, but I have heard some before.
There's like, what's the classic one? I want to be the tangent to your curve. I want to be your...
Wait,
it's like, I want to be a derivative. The punchline is, I want to be a tangent to your curve.
Okay, I feel like I get that euphemism now.
And that's a classic one. I remember that was going around on Facebook when I was doing maths.
Oh, yeah. I still follow a lot of engineering meme pages.
Yep.
And it's all awful puns about like maths and fluid dynamics, and I hate it. I don't know why I'm still following these pages. I've kind of left the field now.
Yeah, what made you start up this podcast?
I think with everyone, I was kind of thinking about my own identity.
Yeah.
And for me, I guess I was quite sheltered and never really felt like I faced that much racism growing up. Although when you're older and you think back to it, you start identifying all the things that actually were racist, but you didn't think it was at the time. You just thought it was, you know, normal playground jokes. The communities do exist, but it's not necessarily put together in this format. So
nice.
I just started it like for fun. It's nothing like big serious, but I get to speak to individuals like you, get to hopefully say something that will resonate with other people and maybe bring the community together, even though we don't all have the same experiences.
Yeah. No, it's incredible how much people share despite having very different experiences. That actually, I was surprised when I did my show that how much it resonated with people. That was always nice. I didn't really expect that. I didn't go in thinking I'm going to represent the entire British East Asian experience, and like, how could you? But it was nice to know that I was just doing my experience and people were able to connect with that automatically. That was nice.
Yeah, so that wasn't something you expected. You were just sharing your own sort of anecdotes and stories.
Yeah, I didn't go, this is what all Chinese people experience. I never wanted to do that, because I don't actually know that many Chinese people, especially not until the last couple of years. When I wrote that first show, I probably didn't know anywhere near as many Chinese people. I didn't grow up with that many Chinese friends, and where did you grow up in the UK?
I grew up in Essex, so nice. It was pretty white. Yeah, but I guess because I was like good at school, I was like fully assimilated, I didn't really notice anything. Thinking back, I was slightly otherized, but actually it was all right.
Yeah, I think that's quite a common experience. We just kind of keep our head down and assimilate. integrate.
Yeah, that's definitely what I did. And I think I still do it now, like in the workplace.
Yeah.
Which is maybe why this podcast has come out at a time when I'm not suppressing my Asian-ness every single day in the office. Even though I work in a nice place and I feel like I can be myself. But now that I'm at home every day, I've discovered maybe I was missing something, and this is actually my final form. Not my That's final form, but my true self.
She's reached her final form.
Hopefully not, because that makes it seem like there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah, that's cool. It's a good thing to do. I think it's an important topic to be explored in any way possible.
I feel like the British Chinese community is still very much trying to find its own identity.
Right.
And at the moment, the things that people very much relate to, it just ends up being like, what did your parents beat you with as a kid?
Yeah.
Or
and food.
How much do you like bubble tea? And food. Yeah, exactly.
It's very food heavy culture. Yeah, I think that is it. That is a lot of it. But I think that will change. I think it will change when people start exploring the more intricate stuff, because I think that's happening within comedy, I think, as well, that they've heard all the basic stuff. And with my comedy, I'm trying to explore newer, more interesting stuff every time, not just go back to the same things about food and maths.
Yeah, I guess that is something that will hopefully change, but I'm not completely sure, because there's still a lot of comedians who are making, you know, very typical old jokes about Chinese people, and then they say that they're pushing frontiers and challenging comedy, but actually no, people have been making these jokes for decades, so
yeah, exactly.
They're really not. So they're still going back to the same old, like, kind of race jokes.
Yeah, that's true. British Chinese community, where I grew up in Cambridge, was very sparse, and yeah, my mum met up with Chinese friends, but we all dotted around the place. We were never like other immigrant communities. In my experiences, it just feels very different from other immigrant communities, which do kind of coalesce and create more intricate communities.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way, especially if they weren't in London or another big city like Manchester or Birmingham, where they're maybe, they didn't really know that many Asian people.
Yeah.
But even so, I still felt like I wasn't Chinese enough, and I'm still too Essex girl or whatever stereotype.
Were you born in Essex?
I was born in central London, but then moved out to Essex when I was really young.
Do you feel a barrier between you and someone who came over from China when they were older in life, maybe at uni, maybe like in their teenage years?
Yeah, definitely. When I think back to when I was studying at university, international students from China were a completely different group.
Yeah, that's such a universal experience for BBCs, I think. We're not quite in that group. We're not in, but we're still other than the white groups.
So some people might look at us and say, okay, they're Chinese. They must be together.
They must be.
But there's such a big language barrier as well, because I don't speak Mandarin.
I don't speak Mandarin either.
Yeah, the international students wouldn't really have really cared about making friends with me.
they were very close-knit, I remember.
But I don't really blame them, because they're coming over here probably with shitloads of money, and they just find their
they're
people.
They're so rich.
They're just here to get a piece of paper, you know, take it back, take over their father's business.
Where did you go for uni?
Manchester,
nice. I like Manchester a lot.
Yeah, it's a great city. Lots going on, lots of culture, huge number of students, even though it's a city. It still feels like a student bubble. And there's a big Asian population there. And I went onto a lot of like East Asian nights out where they would play like K-pop.
Lovely.
I remember those days.
Was K-pop big when you were at uni?
It was big, but I was really into K-pop when I was like 16. Okay.
Who was big when he was 16?
Really into it.
Who was the big?
It was sort of Super Junior, SNSD, Girls' Generation.
And SNSD. They were
You love SNSD.
First,
they were a good one.
Yeah, but
like Big
what's
Bang.
The, yeah.
Yeah.
What's the GG song? The G, is it called G? The
SNSD one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they have a song called G, and they have a song called
O. Yeah, that's O. Yeah.
Classic. I reckon if I heard that song again, I'd probably still remember the dance. Like, that's how much I've listened to it.
The dance is like something, a crazy dance.
And I'm not really into K-pop anymore, but my younger sisters are, so they still play. I mean, there's so many new bands, I can't keep up.
But BTS and stuff, are they into that kind of wave of K-pop?
Yeah, BTS, but also like newer, younger ones.
Newer ones. I don't even know what's after that.
I don't know, like Twice, GOT7.
Never heard of them.
80s. These are just things that I picked up from my sister.
Never heard of them. I just started watching some K-drama though.
Oh yeah. Oh, how's it going?
good, really good. Do you have some recommendations? Yeah, it's called Crash Landing on You. It's on Netflix.
Oh, okay, yeah. Everyone was talking about that at some point.
It's really good.
Is it, like, it's romantic? Really,
it's romantic. It's everything. It's like, I was watching it with someone and we were like, we don't know what genre this is because it just, like, kind of flips between them, but it works because it's about... So the premise is it's a South Korean woman. She goes, like, paragliding and she crash lands in North Korea, basically. She crash lands in the DMZ and meets this North Korean army captain. So it's a romance between them. But it's also really tense. It's, like, got action. It's got political stuff. It's just thrilling. Okay. Yeah?
I can imagine what that might be like. Maybe I'll have to check it out because I'm usually not a fan of the ones where it's a little bit... Like, when it's just romance and it's a little bit too moist for me.
Oh, it's not just romance. Yeah, I think I tried to watch one called Love Alarm, which was too romance. It was too much romance. But this one is, it's everything. It's like, it's funny as well. It's just, they just don't care. It's got love jokes in it.
Yeah, and that's kind of like a forbidden love story. Yeah. But yeah, maybe I'll check it out.
I recommend.
I just can't stand, like, their slow-mo, like, you know, in the romantic moments where maybe it's raining and then the man hasn't said a word, but the girl's like, he must be in love with me. Who is this mysterious man? And then he, like, kisses her and she doesn't even look like she's into it. I feel like this happens a lot in lots of different Asian dramas. And I'm just like, I don't know if I want to watch this. I enjoy it because I'm, like, a bit of a hopeless romantic and I love all that stuff. But then I actually, why I don't like it is because I think it changes me and what I look for when I'm dating in a relationship.
That is messed up, yeah. You don't want to...
Yeah, it is messed up. It gets in your head.
Yeah, you don't want that to be reality. There's no way that's healthy.
No, definitely not. But it's so weird how things are portrayed as, you know, romantic and in a positive light in not just Asian TV shows, but also like in Hollywood.
Yeah, Hollywood rom-coms are messed up.
All sorts of media. But yeah, it really gets in my head and I'm just like, I need to remember that I don't want a guy who's going to ignore me. Like in the TV shows. I don't want a guy who might push me against the wall and kiss me without permission. Wow. I don't want that.
Jeez, yeah.
These are the things that they, you know, that's like a trope, isn't it?
Yeah.
These dramas. And it's all slow-mo as well. Can't stand it.
Love weird montages, like with weird kind of slideshow music.
Then I feel like I'm betraying my people because so many, like, Chinese people love Korean stuff.
Mm, yeah.
And my mum watches, like, historical Chinese dramas.
Oh,
and they have lots of over-dramatic stuff as well.
What's that huge Chinese one called, which is, like, their Game of Thrones, basically? I can't remember what it's called. Ooh,
I don't know.
Yeah, it was big. It was the last few years.
No, I wouldn't know that one. But again, because of the language barrier, I just end up not watching it.
It's harder. It's harder work. Yeah.
Is there anything that you're watching on Netflix now that you would like to recommend?
Ooh.
Apart from
Crash Landing on You.
Korean,
I'm rewatching old stuff, not really on Netflix. Rewatching Frasier, the sitcom.
Oh yeah, I've never got into that.
Big fan. She's very funny. I need to catch up on Better Call Saul. That's one of my favourite current shows. Have you watched it?
No, I haven't. I feel like I've never watched any of the TV shows that anyone has ever said to me.
Not watch Breaking Bad?
No. Never watched Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, Orphan Black, Westworld. All of these are the shows that I've sort of started, like, one or two episodes just to try and get into the hype. But if I'm not super into it at the beginning, I'm not going to watch the whole series.
Did you watch them when you were, like, a teenager? Or if you never watched them?
When I was a teenager, I was a huge, like, Doctor Who nerd.
Doctor Who nerd, okay.
That was, like, a big thing, but then I'm not into that anymore.
Who's your favourite Doctor Who?
David Tennant.
Of course, obviously.
Obviously.
Good stuff. I used to watch way more TV back then, but I don't have the attention span anymore. I get distracted by the internet.
So I can watch TV as long as I have, like, Instagram on my phone at the same time.
Yeah.
Isn't it bad? That's so bad.
You just miss all of it. You miss all of it, yeah. It's so hard to keep up and get into it.
That's probably why I end up not caring about any of the characters in the TV shows that I've tried, because I haven't paid enough attention.
Yeah.
Like, I am listening.
That's what I'm like with a lot of films.
Well, no one's going to watch movies in the cinema at the moment, so all the films are on hold anyway.
Yeah. What was the last movie you watched in the cinema before
lockdown? Parasite was the last movie that I watched. Back to the Korean Wave. That was a good one. Yeah. I didn't expect to enjoy it so much.
Really? I loved it, yeah.
It's not really my genre of movie that I would normally go to watch, but I felt like I had to because it was so successful and, like, critically acclaimed.
So big.
But it kind of gave me nightmares for the next couple of weeks.
It's very intense. Very overwhelming. People have been overwhelmed by it.
So there's one part, like, spoiler alert, where they had where the little kid is like looking in the fridge and then the man like comes up
the
stairs.
Yeah.
His eyes. I had just forgotten nice. About that. I really wish I hadn't remembered that.
That's so creepy.
Yeah, that actually like made me feel uneasy. But thankfully I don't live in a rich house that might have mysterious hidden rooms underground. So
thank God you're not gonna live in a rich house.
Hopefully there's no parasites in my house. Just me. I think my mom would call me a parasite.
Where do you live at the moment?
I live with my family, so where I grew up, Essex, like in the suburbs of London. But yeah, not somewhere anyone would go.
I've never been.
Yeah. Yeah, as I said, there's no need. Unless you want to go to Sugar Hut in Essex, which is where like Towie. When Towie first started, Sugar Hut was the one spot.
Sugar Hut. Wow. Iconic.
So I really grew up with the iconic fake tan, fake teeth, fake hair, fake eyelashes. That was like the beauty standards I was surrounded by when I was growing up. But I'm not a stereotypical Essex girl.
Really?
I don't fulfill those stereotypes.
No. It would have been great if there was a Chinese person in Towie. I feel like...
would it? Do you think?
Maybe.
I think it would have been because they don't exactly command a lot of respect like reality TV show stars, and I think.
But that's part of diversity, isn't it? That we should be allowed to be these complete ridiculous.
Well, yeah, that's
caricatures
true.
As well. We should have that representation as well as being, you know, good at our jobs.
Yeah, yeah. I always thought there was no one who you would definitely know just from looking at them who was from like East Asian descent on Love Island so far, and. Then I was thinking, would I actually want someone from East Asian descent on Love Island? They might just end up being...
No, I think it'll be quite interesting.
I don't think they would get a very good reception. Yeah, everything that they say would just be like analysed or turned in a certain way and say, well, this is what Chinese people think, for example.
I think that would be very interesting to watch that. People exposing themselves and how they react to this one person who's no different from the others except that they're Chinese.
Wouldn't have much hope for if like a Chinese girl like me went on.
No, probably
or
not
like me, but an Instagram version of me.
Yeah, probably not. It would be the carnage.
Yeah, I wouldn't really like to see that, I think. But, you know, representation in different ways, maybe. And I think people like yourself who are doing, how would you describe yourself? Like a creative? I don't know.
Yeah, sure. I'll go with that.
I don't really know what that word means.
Just means anyone making any art.
Yeah, any kind of art, any sort of making creation.
It means we make no money. Creative just means we've chosen a job.
Is that the line?
That makes no money.
Yeah. When I like graduated, I like very much went into the corporate world.
Mm, very standard. Spend finance.
Yeah, it's true, but I'm still based in the city, surrounded by banker wankers.
Got the worst.
Yeah, all the bars around my workplace. Plenty of
I've been in one of those bars once in like Bank or Chancery Lane.
Yeah, that's where I
work. Yeah, not great.
And you thought never again?
Yeah, it was just so corporate. And we're just blowing off steam.
Yeah, well, that's basically in my world where I spend my normal Friday nights. No. Although not now.
Fair enough.
Friday nights now, like Netflix, blanket, 8 p.m. Yeah. You're really active on Twitter.
Yes.
And anyone who's active on any sort of public social media website, it ends up getting a lot of abuse sometimes, particularly if you are tweeting about race-related topics. Yep. Could you give some examples of some of the racism that you've experienced?
Recently, it's all about kind of the Chinese government during this crisis. It's like people saying to me, why aren't you doing anything about your government, kind of that kind of calling out your government. Your people started this. And I was like, well, I'm British. I always just say I'm British. I started just tweeting back a picture of me with my passport.
I think I did see that.
Just like, I'm British. I mean, it's just, well, these people are nuts because they probably know that I'm British. So they just want to have any kind of thing to just try and rile me, or they want to just throw out random abuse. Just because that's all they do. Do people ever message you on Twitter or social media?
No, the only thing on Twitter is I always get tagged as the wrong person. So there's another girl with my name who does sort of...
Same exact name.
Yeah, same exact name, but in the US. And she is in sort of some like technology circles, and I do a lot of stuff around like women in science, women in maths, women in tech. And so we often get mistaken for each other. And her job is like way, way cooler than mine, actually. So she works like programming drones to do like light displays in the sky, almost like an alternative to fireworks. So some country had like had these drones for their like New Year's countdown firework display. So instead of fireworks, they would have drones programmed to do like really cool moving images in the sky, which is really dope.
That's cool.
So cool.
Do you just ever pretend you're that person?
No, but maybe I should. And actually, recently there's a charity organisation which I'm involved with, which is really bad because that organisation works to promote diversity.
Yeah.
They actually uploaded a picture of her instead of a picture of me onto their website.
Shit.
So they have clearly just Googled my name and thought, yep, that must be the same woman. And then uploaded it, which is not great.
I get it a lot with Ken Jeong.
Oh, okay, right. The American comedian, Ken Jeong.
Yes. Like whenever he's on The Masked Singer right now in America. And whether the Masked Singer is on TV, I'll get some tweets tagging me.
Oh, really? That's like a music reality TV show competition, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those crazy ones where like someone's in a mask and they have to guess who they are. It's like, what's going on?
Wait, so people actually tag you instead of when they mean to tag you, but your surname is spelled quite differently.
Yeah, I know. Confused.
Jeong begins with a J.
Yeah, maybe they hear Cheng when. Maybe they just don't. Maybe just don't. No, yeah,
and you don't look alike. That's really strange.
People have been a few times. And it's just completely random.
Do you ever reply or respond?
Sometimes I respond. I did. Someone just. Oh, it was because of the Alec Baldwin roast. Ken Jeong was on that, and someone put, "Wow, I watched Ken Cheng comedy stand up special. Only turn it off 5 minutes after watching, but his roast on Alec is actually hilarious." And I was like, "I just put, I'm not Ken Jeong."
That's so annoying.
Yeah.
But I guess there's worse people to be mistaken for. I think he's like actually super successful because he's got that masked singer format and is rolling it out across the world and just probably raking in loads of money from doing that.
He's raking the lines. I think he was in the Hangover movies and...
Yeah, and he's also a registered physician. He's a doctor.
Yes.
So he's one of these classic Asian creatives who have gone a very traditional route, ticked the box for their Asian parents and then done a huge switch.
Yeah, there are quite a lot of doctor-turned-comedians in the UK.
Are there?
Yeah. Wow. Who was it? Harry Hill was a doctor. Paul Sinner was a doctor. Obviously, Adam Kay, the junior doctor guy. Just loads of them just decide, you know what? I want to do comedy. I'm sick of curing people. I'm sick of helping people. I'm just going to be funny.
Or maybe it's because they get to a place where if they don't laugh, they'll cry. So they start making loads of jokes and realise they're actually, they'd much prefer doing that.
Yeah. I guess being a doctor, you connect with people on a daily basis a lot. And actually, some of the skills are transferable.
Mm. What do you think are the main things that you need to become a comedian?
Ooh, I think...
It's like a job interview question.
Yeah. Obviously being funny, but how do you break that down? Yeah. So sometimes being funny is purely charisma, but sometimes it's having a brain which looks at the world in a different way.
Mm.
Sometimes it's just pure confidence. Sometimes, I guess there's so many different routes to become a comedian. I think anyone who's ever made anyone laugh can do it. It just, you kind of have to understand it, though. You have to understand what makes people laugh, or at least understand what makes you funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... Yeah. Are you looking to get into the industry?
I'm definitely not looking to get into the industry. I'm actually really pretty happy.
Yeah, probably pays more / any amount. There's no money in comedy, especially now.
But no, that's a good one. So I'm going to end the recording here. Cool. I think we've spoken about a whole range of different topics.
That's good. I hope you've had stuff to work with. Thanks.
Hope you enjoyed that episode. I had a really fun time speaking with him, and a massive thank you to Ken. Oh, I only ever say his full name, so saying just Ken sounds weird. Anyways, I was so blessed that you agreed to come on my podcast, and I had a really great time chatting with you. If it seems like the end of our conversation ended quite abruptly, it's because we started gossiping and spilling tea, and I made the executive decision not to publish that all publicly because it would also be exposing myself.
so get out of the episode. I really, really, really hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget to follow at YellowBeePod on Twitter, Instagram. Subscribe, leave a review, share this podcast with a friend who might enjoy it, and join us again next time for another special guest. Thank you so much for listening to Yellow Bee Pod. It's been your girl Natalie, and speak to you soon. Bye.